Now it's time for the United States of Football Show, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily. So, here we are, after the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup. The United States has moved on from there. They'll be going to the semifinals. This is the United States of Football Show. My name is Earl Reed, one of the hosts. Robert Hay is the other host. Robert, how are things going?
Hello. They're going well, Earl. Thank you very much.
It is Sunday night, July 21st, and we are recording this after the U.S. Skidded by. Actually, it was a little sketchy there for a little while, but United States pulled through 5-1. And they're on to the semifinals. But this is the United States Football Show. Like I said, we're glad that you joined us, glad for you to download this, and we really hope you enjoy this. Robert, how are things going for you down there in the Washington, D.C. area?
Well, you know, we are living large since the game today was played at M&T Bank Stadium, which is in Baltimore. So, Baltimore continues to be a very good hosting ground for the U.S. national team as well as the D.C. area. So the D.C. Baltimore corridor is a friendly confines for the U.S. national team again.
Yeah, actually, I was down there last year for a Liverpool-Tottenham friendly. Mm. And yeah, it was a really nice stadium for that. I believe they played on the turf for that particular match. But they might have laid – yeah, I'm trying to think. I think they actually laid down the sod for that now that I'm thinking about it. But – I could be
anything
wrong.
To make Luis Suarez's diving more comfortable.
Yeah, I should look. I have a picture of myself there, so I should actually look at that sometime and remind myself whether there was turf down or not. But yeah, it was 0-0 on that one. This had a little more scoring, and plenty of blue there. It was just amazing to see how many El Salvador fans there are in the Baltimore Washington Metroplex.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know, but this area is a big, big Salvadorian community. There's a lot of people from El Salvador who have family in El Salvador that live in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. So anytime El Salvador plays, it's pretty packed with El Salvador fans.
Yeah, which I think based on the results from the group stages, I think there was a chance that the U.S. would have ended up playing Haiti. And when that fell through, either Haiti or Trinidad and Tobago, one or the other. And because of the results, actually a horrible result in that one match, U.S. ended up getting matched up against El Salvador down there and kind of knew there'd be a pro Salvadorian crowd. U.S. was able to make its way through. But before we talk about that, let's just bring up one little item from that previous round, which was the final match of Group C qualifying, which was the United States versus Costa Rica, and the U.S. pulled out a 1-0 victory. But I'm less worried about the result and more interested in who scored it and maybe the effect that we – I don't want to say that we
we're
had.
I think we should outright say it. We're good luck for Brake Shea. I mean, we said he needed a breakout game, and lo and behold, he scores the game-winning goal. And
on the break.
On the break. So, I mean – I don't believe in coincidences. Breck, I believe you can send us autographed information, maybe do an interview one time. That's fine. That's all we need. But a small thank you would be much appreciated for getting you out of your national team slump.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, we just have to remember that it was one game before. And, you know, he did look horrible against, I believe it was Cuba. But then, against Costa Rica, I mean, he came on as a sub. That may have benefited his, condition at the moment. You know, he's coming off of injuries. He hadn't started much for Stoke. He's kind of working his way back in. I think this, it was a good situation. So he, and on the play, he just, busted tail on the break. Great play by Joe Corona, gets it up to Landon Donovan. And then Donovan's pass is weighted just right on the money for Shea to run onto it behind the defense. And, made Pemberton miss for the goal on the shot. So, or actually, no, Pemberton did get a touch on that. So anyway, yeah, the U.S., that got them through as the leader out of Group C to face El Salvador, which is what happened today. So let's move on to that match. And you were actually on Dan Forrestein's show earlier.
I was.
Probably talked plenty about this, but we'll talk a little bit more.
Yes. Oh, if you insist, we can talk a little bit more about this.
So, you know, U.S., there were some issues to be leery of against El Salvador, but I don't think anybody was expecting the U.S. to go down in this match. You know, U.S. has played very well throughout the early stages, but I also don't think anybody expected the U.S. to actually wax El Salvador the way they did, and you know, the final score might not have been particularly kind to the Salvadorians.
Well, you know, I the interesting quote afterwards was somebody asked Landon Donovan about the goals scored and how the team played, and he said, we should have scored more goals in this game. And I think what made it interesting from a U.S. perspective is we've talked a lot about, you know, the U.S. national team not having that killer instinct and that ability to just go for it and just put a game away. And they really showed that in this game. I mean, they went up 2-0. They had some adversity. They had the penalty called against them. They had a rough going early in the second half. But besides that, I mean, they really took it the game to El Salvador and just played a really good game. They didn't let up on the attack. I mean, you know, if it was even the subs coming in, you know, Eddie Johnson comes in and scores a header in the first 14 seconds. I mean, it's just nonstop from the U.S. It was just waves after waves of attack. And, I think this is a good sign for the U.S. is the fact that they aren't taking these games lightly and they're actually going out there and trying to put the pedal to the metal, which is what they've done in the Gold Cup.
And, I mean, you have these back-to-back performances from Landon Donovan. I don't think he really stood out against Costa Rica a lot. But, you know, in this match, he gets a goal, he gets three assists. The guy has really stepped up and, he came to the plate needing to really, you know, hit a home run in this tournament. And I think he's done that. You know, it gets a little boring listening to some of the Fox Soccer guys just kind of like go on and on and on about Donovan. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he's a... you know, he's a player that's meant a lot to this country. But I think it's easy to forget that, you know, there are reasons why Klinsmann didn't want him on this team at one point or seemed to not bring him in when he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not sure that those issues are all gone. I put on Twitter earlier that, you know, it kind of sounds like Zuzi may have lost his place in the starting lineup here in September because of Donovan's performance. And I, you know, based on what Grant Wall and a couple of other guys are saying, and I just don't know if that's accurate. You know, I'd hope not, because I think there were, you know, reasons why Donovan was sort of snubbed at times. And so I don't know if you have any thoughts about this.
Yeah. I mean, here's my thought. And I really, maybe this is just my soccer mentality. I hate the idea of a solid starting 11. I mean, why do we have to play the same starting 11 regardless of an opponent? I mean, we're not Spain. We're not Italy. We're not Germany. We're a team that is ranked, 20-something in the world. Why can't we do matchups? What's to say that, you know, starting Graham Zuzi over Landon Donovan in a certain match is not the way to go, you know, depending on matchups? I mean, why are we so obsessed as U.S. soccer fans with the starting 11? Is it so wrong that we have maybe, this is going to sound really stupid, a starting 15, you know, maybe three or four players that are interchangeable depending on matchups and throughout lineups depending on who the opponent is and where the game's being played and what's at stake? I mean, I can see Landon Donovan as coming in in September and October and starting, and I'm okay with that, the way he's played. He's played very well. But I also think that Graham Zuzi brings a lot to the table, and he shouldn't just be discarded because of, you know, all of a sudden Landon Donovan's back and, oh my gosh, you know, he's back and we can put him back on the team and all is right in the world. I mean, you know, soccer's a little bit different than other sports because of the limited number of subs, but we could still play a little bit of matchup game here. And, you know, if Landon Donovan needs to start the game on a bench sometimes, that's fine. There's a lot worse people to bring off a bench than Landon Donovan in the 60th minute.
Well, and you know, this is also, you know, there's some tactical issues with this whole mindset too, because you know when I'm thinking about this, you know, Donovan starts in one of two places. You know, in this Gold Cup, he's starting in the spot where Clint Dempsey normally plays, basically sitting right behind, you know, Altidore in the first team or Chris Wondolowski in this current Gold Cup squad. That's where Donovan's playing. He's not playing out wide. He's not playing any deeper than that. He's playing just up front. And so what you're talking about is Graham Zuzi is playing a role on the right. This Zuzi is being sort of mimicked, we'll say, by Joe Corona in ways. You know, so that's where but Joe Corona doesn't necessarily have the same crossing ability that Zuzi does. And maybe Donovan has that too, but you're talking about a couple of different tactical roles. You know, does Donovan come off the bench to spell Dempsey, or does Donovan come off the bench to spell Zuzi, or does Donovan start in either of those positions? I mean, maybe you find ways, like you say, to rotate these guys to help, limit their minutes going on, especially once, you know, assuming that the U.S. can find a way to squeak out a couple of results and stamp their ticket to Brazil for next year. You know, then in October they're going to play a couple of matches that may not be as consequential to the way, you know, to that particular result. So then you can try some things. Maybe then you spell Zuzi with Donovan, or you know. But it's just based off of this performance, Donovan's playing in the role Dempsey is, and I'll tell you what, Donovan has probably played that role better than Dempsey. Mm-hmm. Did in June, I would say. Wouldn't you say? I mean,
I agree with you. And I think one of the things you have to look at is that Dempsey has been a consistent starter under Klinsmann, but Klinsmann's also been hardest, maybe not hardest, but he's one of the guys he's picked on most is Dempsey. And I think that's because he sees the potential, and I think he sees him as a guy he needs to push at the club level and at the national level to play to his fullest. If Clint Dempsey, his performance drops off for club, would you see maybe him getting benched or his minutes cutting into? I don't see why not. I mean, I don't see – Klinsmann's not the type of guy who would sit there and hem and haw and feel bad just because Clint Dempsey's the most recognizable face on this team. If he sits on the bench at Tottenham, or he goes to Fulham and is just playing kind of mediocre football, Klinsmann will sit him. And then you have a guy in Donovan who could play that role. And I think that's one of the good things about this team right now is you do have guys who can play – in different roles and different setups. And that's really where the depth starts to come in and where you start to form a good national team.
Right. And so, you know, the other news that came out before this was that Klinsmann was going to use this new rule that was instituted to bring in some new players, some players that he had, I guess what had happened is that there was an agreement between U.S. Soccer and MLS that certain players would not be picked for the Gold Cup squad unless they made the knockout rounds. And so, you know, Zuzi was one that came to mind as one that could be picked, but he was not. I think that they decided that he had played enough international so far and he should be at the club. Who was picked was Matt Beisler, who started in this match. Eddie Johnson came on and, like you said, got the goal immediately after he came on. Omar Gonzalez, who actually played yesterday for the Galaxy, so I don't know exactly how that's working out, if Beisler and Gonzalez are going to kind of swap in and out. And when they're not scheduled to play, they're going to sit. Or I'm not sure how that's working. And Alan Gordon is the other guy who came in and did not see any minutes. So,
yeah, that's interesting. And I think it was NBC Sports brought up the point of you bringing in defenders and forwards, which have been the two weakest points on the U.S. team for a while now. And it kind of suggests that Jurgen Klinsmann sitting there looking at his defender pool and going, maybe not as deep as I had hoped I'd be able to develop it. So I'm going to have to bring these guys back in case of emergency. I can't rely on Gooch and anymore and guys like that. So it's a little bit worrying for me because at this kind of tournament, you don't want to have to use Gonzalez and Beisler because, you know, you don't want them to lose form. You don't want them to lose confidence, and you don't want them to maybe pick up an injury or just whatever. You want to be able to vet some of these third or fourth pairings that would provide depth in Brazil and things like that. And for the forward situation, I mean, my God, you just want guys who could score. And if you're bringing in Alan Gordon, Eddie Johnson at this point, I think, has secured his spot on the national team. But it's a little worrying, I think, who he brought in. Either he's sitting there going, I'm going to go all in on the Gold Cup, which worries me on one end, or I don't have the depth I thought I did, which worries me in another way.
Yeah, true. And so the other highlight of this match was from a U.S. standpoint, it was a low light, was DeMarcus Beasley's penalty that was called as he fouled, in the referee's eyes, he fouled Rodolfo Zelaya, who ended up taking the penalty and perfectly nailing the Panenka kind of a lob effort to beat Nick Raimondo on that. Just one other thing, Nick Raimondo was really solid in this match. I think without him there, you know, there may have been a goal or two more earlier on for El Salvador, which could have caused problems and just, you know, maybe hit at the psyche of the U.S. a little bit more. But Raimondo was solid. And, yeah, so, but as far as Zelaya goes, they were talking about some rumors that he may be looked at by some MLS sides, maybe even in the D.C. area.
Well, I mean, how could you not? I mean, the guy, he showed off some real skill in this game, and then he was the only goal scorer for El Salvador in this tournament. I mean, what I saw today was I saw a guy who could definitely come in and contribute to a number of MLS teams. So if you're an MLS team that's in the bottom half and you have some money that you can spend, I don't see why you're not looking at this guy. I mean, he's definitely worth taking a flyer on and spending some money on. And I think, you know, this has been a good tournament for him because he's proven himself where he can get a nice little payday in the States. I expect to see him playing in MLS here in the next 6 months or so.
Yep. And so the other two goals or the other goal scorers for the U.S., I think this is good to get these guys involved. Mix Diskerud, Joe Corona, these guys have been sort of on that fringe of the first team or maybe just out of the squad in general when it comes to the qualifying. You know, Diskerud hadn't been called up for any of the qualifiers as far as I can remember. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think people have been asking for Diskerud to be called in, at least looked at. And
I
so
have.
This is, yeah. And so this is a really good jumping point for him. We'll see if he continues to feature in the semifinals, which will happen on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're going to face Honduras there on Wednesday night at, I believe, at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas. You know, so this should be an interesting test for the U.S.
It's also going to be in front of a very hostile crowd. I mean, you have to imagine in Cowboy Stadium there's going to be a huge, especially if Mexico's playing afterwards, it's going to be a very pro-Mexico crowd, and that's going to be a vicious, vicious atmosphere for the U.S.
Yeah, so, but if they can escape that game with a victory, then they will be up in Chicago for the finals, and I believe that will be Sunday? I haven't looked and seen the schedule, but that would be at Soldier Field up there in Chicago, so mm-hmm. You would hope that might have the chance of being a little less of a one-sided crowd towards if you assume Mexico. But, you know, it seems like anywhere you go, you're proud, you know, besides, you know, your
Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, your Columbus is where they hold the Mexico mm-hmm. Qualifiers. You know, you're going to get some serious opposition crowd.
Someone on Twitter said, is there ever going to be a time when the U.S. doesn't have to worry about the opponents outdrawing them in U.S.? And I said, well, maybe in Alaska, if you're playing a Saharan African team in Juneau, you might get a pro U.S. crowd there. Otherwise, it's going to be dicey.
Mm. Yeah. So, and that will be at 4 o'clock actually on Sunday next week. So when we talk next, you know, the next podcast will be right after the Gold Cup. Although I think we'll see how that works out. We may end up having to bring in we may have another guest host because I think Robert, you've said that you.
I have a conference.
Prior engagement.
I have a prior engagement.
So. All right. Well, we've reached.
Sorry, you all are going to miss me next week.
Yeah, they definitely will. Much
it
more
should.
Than you missed me.
Ooh.
So. All right, well, we've reached our first break here. When we come back, we're going to talk some general news, maybe get into a couple heated topics here, and then later on we'll finish out with some MLS scores. You are listening to the United States of Football Show. Please enjoy the B-side shuffle as we go to break. The second segment of the United States of Football Show, part of the Simply Football Network of podcasts, and also part of World Football Daily.
We're the ones that don't swear.
Listen, yeah, you should listen to some of the other stuff out there. There's some Radio Suju. There's obviously the Mad About Football Show. which is hosted by Juan Arango and George Metellus. So you should check them out. You should, you know, there's some other shows out there. Turkey, Russia, and a couple others. And Radio Suju, which that's kind of what Robert was alluding to with us being clean, because Suju
yes.
is not quite so clean. But one other thing I wanted to mention, it just came to me about the Gold Cup. What did you think of Gus and Eric in this Fox Soccer coverage?
Oh man, you wanted to kick off the controversial, didn't you? could you put two more hated people in a soccer broadcast booth? And you know what though? Forget it, haters. I enjoyed it. It was rough at times, and obviously Eric Winalda loves himself a little too much. But you know what? It's fine. He deserves it. I thought it was good. I thought it was fresh. I like the sound. I like how upbeat the two of them were. It wasn't the most technically proficient broadcast, but you know what? It was good. It was different. I like the studio show with the diversity with Warren Barton, Kobe Jones, and Heather Mitts. I thought that mm-hmm. was a nice little mix. And I thought Fox did a good job. You know, it's good for them for trying something different and putting the game on the Fox network.
Absolutely.
Because I spent time watching it on Fox Soccer, and then I was like, oh, wait, it's actually on the Fox network, and that impressed me.
So so before we get into our actual news segment, I just want to say, you guys that are listening, if you could go to iTunes and just give us some feedback, you can rate us, you know, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Just we would really appreciate just having some feedback about the show. We want to know what you like about it, what you don't like, what we could do better, what you'd like to hear us talk about more, and, you know, just try to bring this out for us. I mean, we'll keep doing what we're doing here if we don't hear from you, but, you know, we haven't really gotten any feedback yet, and, you know, obviously we'd prefer good feedback, but, you know, bad, you know, constructive criticism is good as well. So, you know, we're looking for whatever you could bring to the table just so that way we, you know, can respond to what you want to hear from us. So.
Yeah, listen, people, let's have a frank conversation here real quick. We're not getting marching orders from above. There's not a corporation or league or whatever telling us what to say every week. We kind of want to hear from you because we want to make this about the fans. So what you all tell us as fans dictates what goes on this show. So just keep that in mind. We're not Pinocchio'd here. We're not having our strings pulled by some shady corporate entity.
And not that I think
or
that
league.
All those – yeah, I don't – yeah. No. I mean, I don't know if the other shows are getting their strings pulled, but, no. You know, when in Rome is kind of like what I say about it. You know, I think there are going to be certain people that have an MLS side to things that they just are conditioned that way. They look at the realities of this system and say, well – what MLS is doing is trying to succeed in this climate. So, you know, if that's the way they are, and that's why they may get endorsed by MLS. So, anyway, but there are some other podcasts that are directly put out by MLS, and, you know, you could take from it what you want to as far as your own inclinations by listening to them. But like Robert said, we try to be about the game itself in the country. We want to see fairness. We want to see, you know, we just want to see equal representation. So that's what we're about. So we're going to keep putting things out, whether you tell us about it, or, you know, our weaknesses or not. But, you know, we don't, you know, we got thick skin. So let us know. And we'll just try to do better.
Here, here.
Okay. So here's the news.
Sorry.
One of the little firestorms that happened earlier this week was Shad Khan, who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, purchased Fulham FC from Fayed, I believe is the guy's name, but he was the father of Dodi Fayed, who was killed tragically with Princess Diana in Italy, I believe.
Nope, France.
France, okay. France. Well, sorry. I got almost all of that background right, but anyway.
Close enough, yes.
Yeah, Fayed was the guy who put the Michael Jackson statue at Fulham, so on the ground there at Craven Cottage. So anyway, so you know, Khan is getting the Michael Jackson statue and Craven Cottage and Dimitar Berbatov and all that stuff. So, but anyway, the question came up: why are Americans buying into EPL teams or Serie A teams rather than MLS teams. I mean, why does it seem like the line is much longer to get into the leagues over in Europe rather than, I mean, it doesn't seem like you're seeing these big money fellas that, I mean, there's a couple of them, you know, Anschutz, obviously, Kraft, obviously, you know, Red Bull is a, is an international organization, international corporation, not an organization. Well, but, you know, you have your Kroenkes that do own teams, but it's not like, you know, it's not like you have, you know, Jerry Jones buying FC Dallas and just pumping a you-know-what ton of money into that team. You don't have now you have the Yankees and New York City FC, but, you know, you don't have the you didn't have the Steinbrenners for a long time. You don't have – you know, there's a lot of other owners. I'm blanking a little bit on names. Daniel Snyder, for instance.
Oh, Jesus. You know.
So anyway, why are the owners, the Glazers, the John Henrys, the Shad Khans, why are they heading over to Europe?
Two things, Earl. First of all, when I first heard the story, I thought it was Shaka Khan that was buying Fulham, and I got very excited. I'm a little excited for Shad Khan. Second thing.
I thought maybe it was Shakira.
Oh, that would be even better.
But then you'd have PK getting in.
Yeah, that would just be, there'd be controversies. Yeah, that'd be bad.
But Fulham doesn't play in the Champions League very often, so, you know, because PK is at Barcelona. So, you know, there's not going to be a lot of, you know. But anyway, it's not Shakira, it's not Shaka Khan.
So the second point is here. Earl, let's say you're a wealthy man. You work in a very lucrative field. Exactly. Sorry, that was an inside joke there, kids. Say you had the choice between two automobiles that you would buy, and the first one is a Toyota Camry, well-respected, nice car, know it's going to get you places, or a beautiful Mustang, top of the line, you know, I'm not a car guy, as you can tell, but, you know, a really nice Mustang with that great speed, it turns heads, all that stuff. Which one would you buy?
Well, based on my, I guess we're theorizing that I have a good job. Well, I have a good job.
Let's assume that money is no object, Earl. Yeah,
I have a good job.
Yes, we're not talking about your employer. Let's just assume money's
listening. But I don't have the money for a Mustang. But if I did. Yeah, if I'm, you know, if I have $3 million in the bank, if I'm going to get a car, I may not even get the Mustang. I might go a little higher up on the food. But
you get a DeLorean.
But the point is made.
Yes. Why? I mean, if you have your choice of what you want to buy into, it's a lot more lucrative to buy into these EPL or Serie A teams. Or we're only mentioning those two leagues because they both have American ownership. Groups with teams in there, but I mean they are the creme de la creme. They're the nice, big, fashionable, rich clubs. I mean it's great to own Houston Dynamo, but it's nowhere compared to the prestige, and money opportunities and networking opportunities as owning Fulham is. I mean this is just buying into the top level of ownership in soccer, and you know it's people had a problem with that. I think there's some people who are concerned about why this money isn't going to MLS. Until MLS gets to be a top flight international league, that's just the way it's going to be. We have good owners here in MLS. We've got money in this league. I mean, hell, the Yankees just bought into the league. It's okay. This is not an issue. I mean, it should not be an issue. Americans, I think it's good that Americans are buying into the EPL because hopefully, you know, the new ownership of Fulham will take down that stupid Michael Jackson statue because they know better. But this isn't an issue. I think it's good to have an American influence in these leagues. And I think that the ownership group in Serie A, the ownership group for Roma is based out of Boston. They're part owners of the Red Sox. I think that's going to do great things for Roma because it's going to increase their American profile and make a lot of money for this team in an untapped market, which is the American soccer market. So, I don't care. This is good. People are going to do this as long as MLS isn't the best of the best leagues.
Well, I mean, I have one other little perspective on this, and you know, whether you like it or not, tough. you know, if someone wants to buy a team, they're going to go to Europe because in MLS you can't buy a team. What you're doing is you're buying into the league who is allowing you to run a team. So in theory, you know, Bob Kraft does not own the New England Revolution. He is an owner operator, but they are, the league is single entity. And so, you know, let's say, you know, Houston Dynamo have been on the market. So you buy Houston, what are your guarantees that, you know, I don't think you're unfettered. So, I mean, that's part of it. It's like you have to play by what rules are instituted within the league. You know, there aren't as many rules with the Premier League. I mean, basically, you don't go bankrupt. That's pretty much the rule that you have to follow over there. You've got to have a certain number of English players, yeah. But what money you put into it is what you put into it. If you make Europe, now you have financial fair play that comes in. But if you are not planning to go into European competition, you know, you could put whatever money you want into it. There isn't somebody there saying, no, you already have three DPs. You can't go out and spend more than $400,000 a year on another player. So that's a lot of it. If MLS wants to, in the next CBA, loosen up the purse strings a little bit and say, okay, teams, we trust that you're going to keep things on the up and up. Maybe you'll see more Americans get involved. So, some good news. Kevin Alston has returned from a spell away to treat leukemia. That was some tough news to hear for Revs fans and for fans around the league, but it's good to know that he's back now, training, and hopefully he's I didn't see. Did he get a chance to start this weekend?
I didn't see. I have to pull back up the list. But, you know, I think anytime you have a story like this, I mean, you know, this is a good story. You know, leukemia is a very terrible thing, and cancer is, you know, we don't need to lecture everybody how bad cancer is, but anytime you can beat it to the point where you can come back and play at the highest level, you know, this is a great thing. So I think we should all, you know, regardless of what we think of the Revs, we should all stand up and applaud this and hope that he does get back into playing and playing at top flight level sooner rather than later, just as an inspiration for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't even make the 18, but still, I mean, he's getting back into the swing of things, which is good. You know, it's good that he's beat this, and, you know, we'll just, you know, send our prayers and whatnot that he, you know, that he's come through this, and that, you know, he has nothing but a footballing future ahead to look forward to, Sear. So, good news. So our next on our list is the World Cup. So I guess Sepp Blatter just, I mean, you know, things just roll off his tongue just whenever he, I guess, releases some sort of, you know, something from his neurons to say, oh, I guess I can just go ahead and open my mouth. And so, you know, the riots, I guess, in Brazil have made him regret possibly putting the World Cup in Brazil. But rather than regret putting a World Cup in hot old Qatar, what we're going to do is we're going to actually, or Qatar, whatever you want to say, we're actually going to move it to the winter. You know, so in one hand, you say, you have Blatter saying, oh, well, you know, I really regret the decision based on some factors that are hurting us. And then on the other hand, you have a situation where there is a definite situation. Everybody's saying it's going to be a problem, and it's just all they're going to do is change it to summer, which, or change it to winter, which really probably is not going to change a whole lot anyway. So any other thoughts, Robert?
No, sorry. I mean, this is just something that I know I've been harping on and a lot of us have been harping on for a while is, you know, ever since Qatar got the World Cup announced, what, I guess like 2 or 3 years ago now, you know, this idea of, are they really going to be able to hold this World Cup in a summer when it's going to be 100 plus degrees every day? And, you know, you had all of these grandiose stadium ideas and everything's going to be biodegradable and cool. We're going to have cooling units and air conditioning stadiums, and we're going to be able to transport them all over the world. And this soccer, you know, idealistic setup, it just doesn't look like it's going to come through. I think they are going to eventually try and move this to the winter, but it's going to be scuttled because all of the club teams are going to pitch a fit and say, you're not screwing up our schedules for your stupid World Cup. And I think they're going to end up trying to make this work in 110, 120 degree heat in the Middle East in 2022 and hope for the best. So this is going to be an ugly situation. So we'll see how this works out.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, you could do things like do it at night. I mean, there's ways you could. But, for instance, the average high in June in Doha, Qatar, is 106.
Mm. Mm.
The mean daily in that month is 93. The average low is 82. So you play at them at night, and you might get it at least into reasonable temperatures.
Sure.
But you know, in December, if you do it at twilight, you're going to get an average temperature of about 70. So, I mean, that's much more reasonable as far as, you know, summertime temperature goes. But, you know, regardless, I mean, it's such a small country. I mean, you're going to be asking a lot of people to travel to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's like you've got Brazil, you've got Russia. There's going to be plenty of people that just attend because they're residents of the country. Qatar is not going to have a high residential attendance. So,
yeah, although they are a country that is aggressively pursuing business and meetings and things like that. So they will have, I'm sure, plenty of transportation options to get into the country. So we'll see how that works out. That's still another, 9 years away. So a lot could change in 9 years. We'll see what happens.
Yep, a lot could change. Couple of lower league news items. Oklahoma City, a couple weeks ago, there was a little bit of a scrum going on. Both USL Pro and NASL were looking to put teams in Oklahoma City. I'm not exactly sure how this has all been shaken out, but MLS Soccer is reporting that now that the USL Pro group actually has stadium plans, and they would like to make these stadium plans such that expansion would happen possibly for MLS up to 20,000 seats, which to me it's like, you know, another city wants a piece of MLS. Hey. There's a lot of those out there right now. And Sacramento being another one. They announced their name will be Sacramento Republic FC, which I think was a fan vote. That will launch next year in USL Pro. Good stuff. Another team there in the Northern California area to go along with the San Jose Earthquakes. Should be interesting to see. I think they also have aspirations for MLS. Seems like any team that ends up launching, you know, wants to move to the top division eventually. So
yeah, and I'm sure there's a way that they will be able to do that eventually. But also for the Sacramento news, Preki has been named the head coach over there. So former Chivas USA and Toronto FC head coach is their new head coach. So that's exciting.
I've always wondered, you think Preki is a Trekkie?
I know that he is not very popular in Toronto.
Okay, so with that, no.
That's all we'll say about that.
Yeah. There's a little rant segment here that you had listed. What do you want to get into this, or is this something that you?
I think briefly we can get into this, and this is something that.
What spurred you on?
Well, this is something that I see a lot of. I think recently, although maybe it's just come to my attention recently on the internet, and this is something I've heard on other shows and things like that, and I'll give a hat tip to our brethren over at Radio Suju for doing a rant similar to this about the idea of podcasting and soccer podcasting and how it should be a creative way to just express your opinions without having to be browbeaten into following the line. And I really think that I'll give a little bit of background on myself here. So for those who don't know me very well or my background, I work in DC. I'm involved in politics, and as most of us are in DC, and for those of you who know anything about politics, it's a nasty business. There's not a lot of agreement going on these days. You have you're right or you're wrong. There's not a lot of gray area. And so one of the reasons I've got into soccer was because in sports in general, I really enjoy the fact that there is debate and there's gray areas and we can agree to disagree and things like that. But what I've seen a lot of recently in the American soccer sphere is this almost political like approach to soccer where you must believe one thing, and if you do not believe this one thing, then you are wrong and your opinions are discredited and you are in no way allowed to express them. And that really bothers me because, you know, I really don't think we should need to approach sports and soccer in that way. We have a diverse opinions. You know, MLS is a new league, relatively speaking. Let's let the league develop. Let's have different opinions on how the league should be developing. Let's assume that when people express an opinion different than yours, that they are actually doing it just because they care about the league and not because they're general jerks. And let's, you know, even those people who have opinions outside of the mainstream or who come across as just being real whacks. You know what? This is America, people. They have a right to express their opinion, and they're doing it out of love of the game. So let's not have Michelle Bachmann's of soccer or George Miller's of soccer or, you know, these don't become the people who are so ideologically rigid that you can't express or accept that other people have different opinions than yours. Leave that to politics and let that rot. Let's enjoy soccer and the American game, and let's enjoy discussing the game with each other and having fun about it. It's no fun a lot of times to just discuss the game anymore because there's right and there's wrong. Let's not fall into that trap, people.
Breathe. Yeah. I mean, we're past this point where, you know, I think what a lot of the sentiment out there is like, oh, if we piss off MLS, they're just going to fold the league. They're just going to drop it. They're going to go, they're going to run away. They're going to take their game and they're going to leave this country and we're going to be without soccer again. And, you know, this is just a little bit bigger than that now. I mean, you know, you've got networks launching soccer shows. You've got, you know, Premier League stuff going on NBC soon. I mean, you know, you've got multi-layers of soccer that are coming to the masses. I mean, you just, you know, we're past this point where we have to kind of like say, oh, you know, MLS, these guys, they're just, you know, if you push them too hard, then they're going to start losing money and then they're just going to blow it up like NASL did. Well, I think there's too much into this now for that to happen. So, you know, you can kind of demand a couple things. You know, you can kind of say, hey, I'm paying money. I'm going to games. I'm a season ticket holder. Why is it that if I'm in Seattle and there are 60,000 people there, you know, why can't we get a David Beckham? You know, why, you know, we've got twice as many fans coming to our games than the Galaxy do. Why is it that they get to spend all the money? So, I mean, you can ask these questions, and that's kind of what you're getting at, Robert. And I'm glad that you put this in here because I agree. I think it's, there's too much of this. Oh, well, if we piss somebody off, it's, you know, we're going to be back into the, you know, mid to late 80s where there was, you know, soccer, you know, the desert. And, I mean, come on. you know, there's a lot of money to be made here in this country. And unless someone steps up and starts grabbing the market share out of it, and MLS should absolutely be grabbing the market share somehow. It's there. This is less of a risk than they ever had in the 70s. So, you know, why they treat it like it's such a risk, that's something for you to ask them. Again, the question is able to be asked. This is a free country. Someone should not be shouting you down. And if they are, you know, you've got forums to talk about that. You know, you've got Twitter. Go for it. And, I mean, this is – we'll just mention our friend Zach Woosley. At Radio Suju, he had an interview with Ted Westervelt that he released last, I guess it was Friday, that, you know, Westervelt is a guy that is, you know, he is an unabashed pro-rel guy, and he does not back down from a fight. He will not mince words, and he, you know, he has his theories on things. And, you know, a lot of the media people in this country will just not deal with him. And I kind of understand that. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's a tough guy to deal with. But on the other hand, when it's your job, you know, I don't know. So go listen to that interview. I think he comes across as a little less wacky than what he does on Twitter. You know, but, you know, Zach has done a couple of different, like you said, a couple of different podcast episodes, which I think really touch on, you know, getting right down to it, saying, you know, why is it that we can't have civil debate on different or on certain topics? And if you're just using, you know, you can use the cop out and say, oh, well, we don't talk about it because Ted is an a-hole. Well, you could say that. that's not a good enough reason. I mean, if you want to shut him out from your debate, fine, but go find someone else that wants to debate with you. There are a lot of people in this country who think to themselves, MLS would be a heck of a lot more interesting if there was promotion and relegation. Maybe promotion and relegation can't work. That is a very, very real possibility. I kind of think that right now, too. But why can't it be talked about? That's just basically it.
And don't take this as a plea that we want to be on ESPN every week and we're just bitter that this podcast, while popular, is not quite up there with some of the ESPN or Fox Soccer ones. No, it's just a matter of and this is probably endemic on social media, just be polite, man. Just respect other people. Form friendships. Don't be a jerk. I mean, this is true of just of other areas too, but especially in soccer, it's a small, tight-knit community. Don't be a jerk. Just be nice. Debate. You know, have fun with it. This isn't life or death, guys. It's soccer. Just have fun.
So when we get back, we're going to talk about MLS because we like MLS. I mean, you like MLS, right?
We're going to debate to the death on MLS. Well, maybe not that far, but yeah, I kind of like it. It's a nice league.
There may be some people that really like if we were to fight to the death about MLS.
That'll be another episode.
Yeah, but, you know, we want to see MLS succeed. So we're going to talk about some MLS results, and we'll wrap up the show after that. So when we get back, we'll do that. You're listening to the United States of Football Show.
And welcome back to the USF Football Show. We're on to segment 3. But before we get too deep into the results, I want to give a shout out to my boy John Mills. He was kind enough to give our show a shout out
on
his podcast. Exactly. Just like that. Despite the fact he is not a huge soccer fan, and we ended up talking about making fun of soccer via The Simpsons, I want to give him as a thank you a shout out for his show. If you are listening to this show and you consider yourself a sci-fi or comic book nerd, check out his podcast, Words with Nerds. It's a great show. It's him and his buddy Craig Sorrell talking about nerdy stuff, and it's just very entertaining. I am not a full-blown nerd, and I enjoy it every week. So check that out, Words with Nerds. So now that we've finished...
Donut. it was good that I talked about Trekkies earlier.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, see, there's a tie-in there. Everything in life goes back to The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 11. So speaking of cartoon characters, let's dive into too easy MLS results for the week. And we'll go in chronological order like we did last week and just kind of comment on some of these matches. One match we're really not going to comment on is Toronto FC 0, New York Red Bull 0 because
actually I will make a little comment because this comes for Toronto right after a match midweek where they lost to Chivas USA 1-0 after Chivas went down a man. So, I mean, Toronto, you know, earlier in the season, I thought they were looking like, you know, Ryan Nelson might have had them turned around. Oh, they're just, they can't wait for Diego Forlan to get there because, if that's happening, whoever they get, you know, Tim Lewicki, who... masterminded the David Beckham transfer at LA. He's up there in Toronto now, and you know there was an article. He wants to do big things up there for all of the teams that Maple Leaf Sports owns. But it's just like, mm-hmm. Good luck to them. Maybe they can pretend that Toronto is actually Montreal or something like that with their place in the standings and say, look, we speak French. We top, you want to come our way, right? Because you don't want to play for a basement team, right? I mean, Diego?
Exactly, yeah.
Anyways, I'll get off my snark wagon now. You can get back to the results.
Well, I mean, they have turned it around in Toronto. So instead of backing down the table, they've actually turned 180 degrees and just driving straight down the bottom of the table, except for one roadblock in their way that we'll get to later. ooh, all right. Seattle Seattle played this week, and they played the Colorado Rapids. This is the fringe game in terms of the fringe playoff contenders game, and not much was decided. It was a 1-1 result. Drew Moore scored in the 60th minute to put Colorado ahead, and then you had DeAndre Yedlin, MLS All-Star, DeAndre Yedlin, who tied up the game in the 65th minute. Earl, any thoughts on this one?
Not too much. You know, you get a couple defenders scoring goals. That usually has something to do with set pieces, which is kind of a common theme in MLS. But, you know, it's nice to see a match where goals happen, because there were quite a few of them this week where goals did not happen. Like the one before we talked about, Toronto and New York.
And the one right after that we're going to talk about, Montreal and Dallas.
Wow, what a segue.
Yeah, that was good. This one was also ended in a nil-all draw. So this one, I watched some of the highlights on. It was an interesting game. But, you know, Dallas all of a sudden is in a scoring drought. Their defense has been playing very well. And this was, I believe, Rolf Hernandez's seventh shutout of the year, I believe it was. I have to go back and check the stats. But, you know, with the good defense for Dallas comes a lackluster offense. And Eric Hasley actually had a couple of good chances in this one, but Troy Perkins denied him. And then Montreal, who's been struggling and scuffling recently, was able to clamp down on the goal scoring, but wasn't able to do any goal scoring on their own. So, and the other note from this game, this was a season high 20,000 plus who attended this game at Stade Saputo. So,
It was Fernandez's seventh shutout.
There you go.
But the leaders are Bobby Shuttleworth and Donovan Ricketts. Both have 9 shutouts on the season.
I would have lost a lot of money betting against that at the beginning of the year. You never
definitely
that one.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, you know, you think Matt Reese has got the job in New England probably, and then that
Donovan
tragedy
Ricketts
happened up there.
Donovan Ricketts.
And not only that, but yeah, Donovan Ricketts, especially with Portland and their defense being particularly suspect at times, but you could move on to another nil-nil real quick if you wanted to with that Portland segue.
Yeah, well, there you go. You were there, so segue away.
No, I wasn't there. No,
I
wasn't.
You were there. Okay.
No, we had a little bit of stuff come up, so I didn't get a chance to get up there, but I watched it. I mean, it wasn't a terrible game. You know, it's so easy to just bag off the nil-nils as, you know, just boring games. But, you know, there could be a lot of interesting stuff that happens in nil-nils. And then, you know, this one, this happened to be one that there wasn't as much interesting stuff.
So this was a bad example.
Well, you know, I think Portland is, you know, a team that is very quick to attack. You know, Will Johnson, I think, really gets, you know, when he wins the ball out of the midfield, I mean, he just really springs them forward, and, you know, something's going to happen. In this match, it just so happened that it wasn't a goal. But, you know, rainy night in Philadelphia. They had to actually postpone the second half for about 30 minutes because of a lightning storm, and they, you know, for the safety of the players and the fans. But, yeah, I get a little miffed sometimes with, you know, the just, oh, it was boring, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, nil-nil is, you know, so Portland usually attacks it. In the second half, they tried to play a little bit coy, tried to play a little pragmatic, and, I mean, Philadelphia had the better of the stuff in the second half and just couldn't get it done. McInerney back from international duty didn't really factor into the match. A whole lot got subbed off, so, you know, he's going to have to get back into the groove in order to, you know, really, I think, remain in that talk of, you know, maybe best 11 for the season. Because he didn't make the All-Star team, and I think that is definitely something that's weighing on fans' minds. And just has had a little bit of a drop-off. He's got to pick it back up.
Happens with those youngsters sometimes. But I
sure.
Think,
he's only like 20, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I suspect that Philadelphia Union fans want that to want him to start scoring again. So, well, let's talk about a match real, you know, here that was not nil-nil, although for a long time it looked like it was going to be. New England goes into Columbus and wins 2-0. Both goals came in second half stoppage time. Goncalves in the 91st minute, and then Fagundes on the break, basically jailhouse break, in the 94th minute to put it away. This one, you know, like I said, it was very even throughout. A couple of good chances for Higuain and the Columbus Crew. That transfer to Arsenal or Napoli must really be weighing on him. But, you know, he just was not able to perform. Wait, that's not the same Higuain.
No. That's not Gonzalo. Yeah, no. You got to keep those guys.
Although, to be honest with you, at this point, that might be Arsenal's best bet. We won't dive into that.
I mean, Fagundes just keeps having just a breakout season for him. So,
yeah,
you know, all the credit to him to, as a young player, just, turning it on this year. He's got 6 goals. I mean, it's not huge, but for a guy who kind of like floats between the forward and midfield position, I think that's a solid, that's a solid rake so far this year. I mean, he could get into double digits pretty easily. The guy's like 18 years
old.
Yeah,
he's 18. I mean, buy him a drink.
Maybe 19.
You see him. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I guess he is 18. He is 18. So yeah.
Well, the point is, he's not even. You know, he's still a teenager and he's scoring like this. It's pretty darn impressive.
Yep.
Yeah. So hats off to the Revs for getting a good win on this one and doing it with the young guys. So
I didn't even score on prom night, but actually, I didn't even go to my prom. So. Speaking of words with nerds.
Ooh. Oh my, and this podcast has gone to a very dark place. I knew at some point we'd make her all cry on the show. Well, speaking of crying, let's go to the Chicago Fire match. And Chicago Fire 4, DC United 1.
Oh, DC United lost. Yeah, now that's like bipolar city. I go from
cheer you up
down in the dumps to, yeah.
This game was over in the first half, if not the first 20 minutes. Chris Rolfe basically did a dance on DC United's face on this one. The highlight of this game was newcomer for the Fire, Jeff Laurentiis, beating out a number of DC United players in a foot race.
Yeah.
I'll just let that.
That was and then you had Joel Impair, you had two guys that are not exactly wet behind the ears,
yeah,
who just kind of torched the team, and then you have Joe Willis, who kind of looks like a
serial killer.
I'm trying to think. Well, I was gonna say porn star, but
a little bit of that.
I mean, after the goal that Rolfe scored that started it, I just thought to myself.
Yep.
Hamid needs to get back to that team really quickly because that's just
really
bad. That's really bad. I mean, and Joe Willis was challenging Hamid there a year or two ago.
Yeah, he's still, I think, Joe Willis is, I think, still a quality keeper, but that first goal was just a debacle. I mean, that's just CYO mistake. So, but that's, DC United season. They're the ones keeping Toronto above water. So good win for the Fire and, helps keep them going. By the way, the notable thing about this match was the Fire scored as many goals as the previous 5 games that occurred before them. Around the same time. So the Fire had 4 goals in that game. The games we just discussed had a total of 4 goals. So. Fire were on fire. Let's talk about some interesting games. Sporting Kansas City 2, Real Salt Lake 1. This one was a very controversial game because of a sending off on the Real Salt Lake side. And Earl, do you want to talk a little bit about this one? I know you had some opinions on this one.
Well, I mean, I think Sporting Kansas City is a team that probably gets some calls anymore. And I started thinking about more, Winger probably deserved the second yellow. And I'll tell you what, he really did take out, was it Kai Kamara?
Kai Kamara. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just really fitting that, Salt Lake gets Winger sent off. I mean, that's gotta be something Christ needs to do better is try to gauge the situation and know that maybe Winger's close to, getting that sending off and that he might want to try to, bring on it. But, their team is under, kind of under the gun because they don't have, Beltran's with the U.S. national team, Raimondo's with the national team, Saunders got injured, Beckerman's not. I mean, you've got all these guys that are away, and you know Kansas City kind of got hit. Hit the perfect timing for that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, Kansas City, you know, they're kind of becoming one of these, posh teams that I think MLS just kind of looks out for. I mean, with the Zusi re-signing, that kind of like hints to you right there that, you know, that they have something going for them. And, you know, MLS is, I mean, not to say that they threw this game or anything like that. I just think that, that's not the point. I just think that, the referee could have just said, that's it. I mean, this is your last warning, because I mean, it wasn't like he was rushing down the middle of the field or anything. It was just going into the corner. It's probably a yellow. I don't know. It's just,
well, look, there are a couple of things.
I kind of argued both sides of it, but
well, I'll argue the other side. First of all, your referee was Matthew Forrester, which probably a bad sign right there. The first, for those who did not watch the match, the first yellow card on Wingert was in the third minute. He and there was a ball that Kai Kamara was going up for, and Wingert kind of went up for it, but he kind of also threw his shoulder into Kamara and went through him to get the ball. I think that was a pretty obvious yellow. It was a nasty collision. And then in the 66th minute, Wingert took down, I forgot who it was again. Do you remember who he took down on the wing?
Was it Saad?
I think it might have been
Sunni Saad.
Yeah, but you know, basically it was it wasn't quite a last man, but you know, he had a break on and Wingert just took him down. So I mean, I think you're right. Jason Christ probably deserves some of the blame for that one, to not sit there and go, my guy's sitting on a yellow, maybe we should think about a sub here, tactical sub. You know, but you got to give a yellow in that situation. It was a pretty clear breakaway, or close to a breakaway, and he pretty much held him up. So, I mean, I think that's a yellow in that situation. And I agree with you. Kansas City's becoming a kind of a popular team, but Wingert should have known better, and Christ probably should have known better. And you know, they blew the game for him. I think 1 minute after Saad scores the equalizer, and then Aiko Parra, who is playing for Beisler, actually, in this game, scores in the 97th minute to take all 3 points. So tough, tough loss for RSL. Good win for Kansas City, but such as it is. And then the final.
Yeah. You missed the highlight of the match, which was Jimmy Nielsen just having a real howler.
Yeah.
For Real Salt Lake's opening goal.
Oh, yeah. He just kind of whiffed on a ball. He jumped for it and whiffed on it and just kind of landed right there for the first goal from Robbie Finley. I mean, it was ugly.
And in the hot pink, he just kind of looked like sassy whiny pants, just like falling to the ground and like, I just missed it. I mean, it was, you know, classic Jimmy Nielsen. I mean, the guy is one of the most just expressive players in MLS. And so, I mean, his reaction to kind of, just a real boner of a play, just you feel bad for him. I mean, but you know, you also don't, because you kind of knew that the reaction was going to be worth the price of admission. So I think we all like Jimmy. It's not like he's it's just there are times when he can be a little aggravating with some of his theatrics. So
yes, and Robbie Finley will never have an easier goal than that one. That was a gift. So should have put a card with that one.
Unless he's up against Joe Willis like Chris Rolfe was.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Actually, that one was – that took a little bit of skill.
It took a little bit of skill, and it just didn't help the positioning. But anyway, interesting match between the two, I believe, conference leaders at this point. And then at the end of the night, the late game was the Los Angeles Galaxy 2, Vancouver Whitecaps 1. Camillo takes over the goal-scoring lead in this match, notching the first goal. But it was the prolific scoring tandem for LA. They were without Mr. Keane in this one with some kind of ailments pulled. I can't even remember exactly what he pulled, but he was out. So instead you had Villarreal and Zardes with the goals in this one. Who needs your Irish international designated player when you got those two guys up there? But 2-1 to the Galaxy in this one, beating Vancouver. Any thoughts on this one?
Well, I thought that the goal that Camillo had, that Cuticini could have done better with that. I mean, it wasn't really – I mean, it was like 4 inches away from his foot. I mean, you know, he just did not make himself big, and you know, but yeah, you know, Zardes and Villarreal are two really, you know, exciting young players, and you know, it's kind of unfortunate that they ended up at the Galaxy, but because I think there are plenty of teams out there that could use them. DC.
You could Toronto. Basically say that about any player for those two teams.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, you have a lot of players that, you know, I mean, Vancouver's not one that needs him. I mean, they've got Maddox and,
yeah.
You know, obviously Camillo. But, yeah, I just Los Angeles comes back from the 1-0. So, yeah, it's just I don't like the name StubHub Center. That just does not sound natural at all.
No, it sounds very
Home Depot LA. Center flowed. StubHub Center just kind of sounds like, oh, I think I'll check StubHub for a ticket.
Mm-hmm. Which is
oh wait,
paying
maybe
all
I
money.
Should. Oh wait, so wait, so when you get when you're StubHub and you get the rights to LA's home stadium, do you have to pay extra because you're basically sapping their season tickets and things, you know what I mean? Because it's like if someone goes on to StubHub, they're buying something that was kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, don't you get what I'm saying? It's like the, you know, rather
I can't
than go
say
to the
that
box
I do.
rather than go to the box office, you're basically rebuying
a
ticket.
Yeah, yeah, basically, why are you rewarding a company that is taking away from your revenue stream?
You would think.
I don't.
So they have to pay a premium in order, you know, or is this just sort of? I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I mean, the LA Galaxy aren't hurting for money, so let's not feel too bad for them.
Yeah. It's like putting the cart before the horse. Or the
exactly.
Egg before the chicken or the...
Don't ever put eggs before chickens. It doesn't end well. So, speaking of ending well, we are going to take a very quick break, and then we'll come back for our final segment. We're going to try and do something fun with a very serious topic. You're listening to the United States of Football Show on with Simply Football and the World Football Daily Network.
So this is going to be the last segment of the United States of Football Show. Earl Reed, Robert Hay with you. Thanks for downloading. We really appreciate it. And we just thought we would reward you with a little bit of silliness here. We're calling this the funny ender, which we're going to try to put in every episode. I don't know if it'll ever always be another segment or if we'll just tag it on to segment 3 in the future. But anyway, so enough of that. This is what it is. So, Robert, how would you change the MLS All-Star Game?
Well, you know, basically what this came out of is there's been a lot of discussion as to how the MLS All-Star team is picked, you know, guys like Jack McInerney getting left off and, you know, whether certain players are picked because they play for certain teams and, you know, what the composition should be. And so I thought, you know, let's take a crack at what we would do to change the All-Star Game. And you know, I'm on record as saying I don't like All-Star games. I think they're kind of boring. They don't mean much for anything. So with that in mind, since it doesn't count for anything and it really doesn't do much for the league, why not just throw out the current format and let's take some of the best things from other leagues and put it in. So let's say, okay, every year you pick two captains. But it's just like you do in hockey. In hockey, you have two captains who pick the teams that will play for the All-Star team. But instead of just having two captains who pick the teams, you form a coaching staff. And each coaching staff will be composed of the following. One player that is picked, who is an all-star, that is picked by the players. So if the players really like Kyle Beckerman would be one captain. And then, you know, Landon Donovan, for example, would be the other part of the coaching staff that would represent the players. The second part of the coaching staff would be a fan selected from a cheering section from the team that won the conference the previous year. So you would have the leader of whatever the LA Galaxy cheering section that you'd want to represent would be there, and then one from the Houston cheering section. They would be part of the coaching staff for each team. It would be paired with Beckerman and Donovan.
Are they
the third member?
Are they supposed to be sober or drunk?
The rules do not specify.
Okay.
The third member of a coaching staff would be a notable European manager who is on vacation to lend a little clout to this one. Or would be retired, so maybe you can bring back Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, David Moyes has nothing better to do except for to stir up trouble by making outrageous bids on players. He could come over for a couple of days and be part of the coaching staff.
My vote
so on
is,
and so forth.
Yeah,
and then the fourth
My vote would be for Dick Advocate.
Because he's such
advocate.
Because he's such a good manager, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. And
he's got a good soccer mind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. we'll leave that at that.
I just like his name, Dick Advocate.
I know. I was trying to keep this show PG.
PG or PG?
Can it be both?
PG and peachy. Yeah, I don't know.
There you go. And I'll just round out my coaching staff. A member of the media selected by the press, you know, the press corps or whatever. They can figure it out amongst themselves. So that would be your coaching staff for each All-Star team. The coaching staffs would then pick the players. And then on the assigned day, the two teams would face off. Because, you know, you don't have the prestige of playing a European power or whatever. But at the end of the day, there's so much downside, very little upside to beating a Chelsea or a Roma or whatever. Might as well just make the game fun. And since, you know, these players aren't paid as much, let's have a sponsor who will provide a financial incentive. And then after the game, the winning team or the losing team buys the winning team beers.
Nice.
That's how it changed the All-Star game.
Okay, so let me just preface this by saying, of course, we're just being facetious here. This is
absolutely
totally an exercise in tongue-in-cheekedness. Mm-hmm. So this is the way that I would decide the MLS All-Star game. You get your best 11 players on out of the East, your best 11 players out of the West, and since MLS loves NFL so much, they just play NFL-style football. Mm-hmm. Just get, you know, you put, you know, Landon Donovan can be your Tim Tebow-type quarterback or tight end or whatever. Ooh. Tebow's playing now.
Yeah.
You know, for the West, and you could put Thierry Henry. I'm sure he would be, you know, great as a wide receiver probably, and you could get Tim Cahill, you know, kind of running those Gronkowski-esque routes. And trying to think, who would be a good running back? Well, for the West, Chris Winger, because he really, you know, kind of lowered the shoulder and just.
Yeah.
You
know, there you go. Yeah, he could hit a hole.
Yeah, he could just. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, you have a lot of different players.
So the player in the Tim Tebow role, would they also have to have the elective celibacy to go with that?
Maybe.
Mm, that would make an interesting game.
But now the only thing is that you would then select let's see. I mean, you got to find someone to be the kicker. And
oh yeah.
I'm not sure that, I mean, would anybody qualify to be the, I guess.
No.
Maybe you could have the goalkeeper be the kicker since they really
– yeah, there you go.
You know, they tend to not get a chance to really kick at a target usually, so they'll – unless it's a target man, but yeah. We've gotten a little silly with this, but do you have any other thoughts on how we might want to change the All-Star game?
Besides eliminating it completely, no, not none whatsoever. But, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, you know, I have my own crazy idea for improving the All-Star game, let us know. Put it on the Facebook page, on Twitter, in the comments, on any of the many ways you can listen to us. But share your thoughts on how you would change the All-Star game in a funny or maybe not so funny kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an All-Star game, and I don't know. They never change it, really. So
the only positive is the guys who get picked get a bonus, and that's the good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, if you go to Philly Soccer page, I wrote an article about that. It was, I believe, this week. Yeah, basically based on the fact that the player of the month for April and May, Jack McInerney, was not selected. So basically the player of the whole spring, a half of the first half of the season, which is basically where it should be ranked from, was snubbed. Yeah, I mean, it's an All-Star game. It's going to happen. I think sometimes they like the snubs because that drives people to write articles and talk about MLS, which is something that helps the league. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of this there's no such thing as bad news. I think I was at P.T. Barnum. I forget who said that, but
yes,
I think it was. So I guess on that note, we probably ought to put this baby to bed and probably head to bed ourselves. So
absolutely.
Since it is a little bit late, Robert, thanks for just being a part of the show, and hope the fans really get a lot out of this. You know,
I hope so too, and I hope they send in all kinds of good and positive comments. And if you are going to share comments, just be respectful. Criticism, respectful criticism.
Yeah,
take it.
Yeah, we could
be jerks.
Yeah, just don't call us names.
Yeah, and if you do, make sure it's in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah, like Robert or.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, for Robert Hay, I'm Earl Reed. Thanks for listening to the United States of Football Show. And until next time, we hope you get all 3 points.